भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यानि सुतारिणे। हरे कृष्णा। फील्स लाइक आई एम बैक इन ब्रज। I'm happy to be with you all again. I was already missing you all. Those who went, how many of you went to Braj here? How are you feeling now? Huh? So I heard someone said ecstatic. I never thought that it was such a tormenting experience. Anyway, so, yeah, actually I was feeling that separation, that somebody who was telling me, actually I already received two letters, one from Shravananda Prabhu, our God brother, and he mentioned that how much he liked it. So I'll put it on the internet, that letter. And also another letter from Kapil Dev Das. He also said this similar thing, that how much he appreciated it and how much he is missing the devotees of that devotees association. And I was reflecting on those days that we spent there together, that we need this association. Often we don't really realize that, especially we, the full-time devotees, sannyasis, because we live in a world of Krishna consciousness. We are always surrounded by devotees most of the time. But many of you do not have that good fortune. Staying at home, doing your job, dealing with the material nature constantly, must be very, very difficult. And I was discussing with a devotee today, and he was actually relating that to me, that how much they need this kind of arrangement. Because in that life, Krishna consciousness is just a part-time thing. Probably once a week, Sunday, coming to the temple, being in the association of devotees, and rest of the time just out there, dealing with the very difficult external energy of the Lord. And therefore, when we get such an opportunity of to be together, like so many of you are there together in a very pure spiritual environment. Actually, you create that environment. Of course, this time the retreat in Braj had been very special, because that's a beautiful temple setup. It's a very enlivening atmosphere. Beautiful temple, beautiful arrangement, beautiful landscape. And the people there also, it was a Ballav Sampradaya temple. Srinathji's temple. And I noticed that those people are also very, very nice people. And very committed, very dedicated. And they treated us, they received us also very well. And for that, I will express my special gratitude to Nilamani Prabhu. Because my first impression was rather negative about that place. I didn't see that place, but I just, the report that I got from some devotees about that place, it was not very inspiring. So I was thinking that, well, let's go somewhere else. But Nilamani Prabhu, from the beginning, he was insisting, no, Maharaj, it's a nice place where it'll be very nice. And it's true. Like the facility that they offered, I don't think in America you can get such a facility anywhere else. Beautiful, large area, and beautiful temple, very clean. The accommodations were reasonably nice. It was fairly decent. And actually, as devotees, we don't really care so much about. As long as the place is clean and the proper facilities are there, we feel quite comfortable. And so that place actually made a big difference. And it was completely cut off from the rest of the world. It was, and the whole atmosphere was just spiritual. And you all created such a pure spiritual atmosphere. And on top of everything, the kitchen was so nice. And at least the one place where we didn't have to worry about the cleanliness of the place or purity of the place. We knew that every utensil that we used was pure, or rather uncontaminated. Everything was very beautifully arranged. So, and as I was saying, like, I'm already missing the retreat. I don't know about you all, but so, very happy to be with you all once again. And I'm taking the time to just communicate with the devotees, because devotees, those who went, and maybe I'm neglecting those who didn't go there to the retreat. But I thought that I would just share my feelings with them now that I got this opportunity. And Ratha Jatra also was nice. I was under the impression that it won't be such a big Ratha Jatra, but it was quite big. Quite a lot of people came, and the atmosphere was, and the scene, the setup was beautiful on the bank of that river. The whole drive was on the bank of the river. Not a very long stretch, but it was nice. So as I was telling, like, we need this Vaishnava association, devotee association. And the more we try, the more we get it is beneficial for us. We should actually, I'm going to tell my other god brothers also to create this kind of arrangements, to create the good fortune for the householder devotees congregation devotees all around. It's happening, like Sachinandan Maharaj organizes this kind of retreats. Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nithai Ki Jai. Jai Shri Shri Srinath Ji Ki. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. When I came back, one thing occurred to me, that in our temple, Srinath Ji is more alive than the Srinath Ji temple. There they have, is just a relief, and so far away. And here he is so real. Right here. More alive. More real, yeah. So, one thing is that yesterday we were supposed to show the Ujjain DVD. I just thought that I will just tell you all what I had been doing. And so then yesterday we couldn't show that. So some suggestion was that we do it here tonight. Now, what do you think of this? Do you like to see the thing? Yeah? You wanted to say something? How many of you have seen the first one? Okay. So now, actually I didn't know which one they had brought. So, the this is the first one, Rupanuga. This is the first one. Anyway, then let's forget that. Because most of you have seen that. So. No, that's okay. Yeah, so both are actually the copy of, okay. Okay, it's okay then. Maybe I can just tell you briefly what I'm doing. Most really you would want to know that. At least, it's important that I also make some, I submit some report to you all from time to time. One thing I can say, I am trying my best not to be in Maya. And the things are going on quite nicely there. Like, things have happened quite quickly. My target was, my plan was to build a temple there within 1 year's time. The reason I wanted to complete the temple in 1 year, because government actually, when we went there, the government, the city authorities, allowed us to use a facility for 1 year. So they gave it to us for 1 year. And it was a community hall. And generally the community hall is meant for the use of the public, like they can rent it and they can have their festivals and ceremonies there. Like often they use this community hall for wedding, but they were very nice that for 1 year they just allowed us to use that facility. And when we had a limited period like that, then I thought that we have to build a temple within 1 year. And since I did not have any experience building a temple, what to speak of a temple, I did not even build a hut before. So I thought that yes, we can do it in 1 year's time. But when people started to express their doubts about that, for example, just before our groundbreaking ceremony, there was a press conference. The reporters, the newspaper and TV reporters came, and they asked me whether it'll be possible to build a temple in 1 year. And so my response was that my spiritual master built 108 temples in 10 years' time. So building one temple in 1 year time, what's the big deal about that? So that is how I kind of responded. But then some of my god brothers also started to express their concern. But somehow my feeling was that if Krishna wants, it will happen. And I used to tell them one incident from Krishna's pastimes. When Nanda Maharaj left Nandagram, because there were so many attacks of the demons, so they felt that maybe we should shift to some other place because so many demons are coming and attacking. So Nanda Maharaj told everybody that that he decided to go somewhere else. So then everybody agreed, yes, let's do that. So they left Nandagram in the morning and they traveled through the day. And towards the evening, they came to one spot. And Nanda Maharaj liked the place somehow. And he thought, anyway, we have to take rest in any case. So we'll pitch our tent here tonight. And tomorrow we will see. And that is the place that was actually Vrindavan. They just, in the evening, they arrived there. And that night, Krishna called Vishwakarma and told Vishwakarma to build houses for every family overnight. So in the morning, when they woke up, they found that there are all beautiful houses with beautiful moats around and gardens and beautiful setup. And not only that, they found that in front of each house, the nameplate announcing to which family that house belonged. So this is how they settled down. And my point was that if Krishna wants, he can create, he can do anything. And with that conviction, I just embarked on that project. And at the same time, I tried to be as practical as possible also. Because I knew the marble work will take the maximum time. Therefore, long before, 4 months before the groundbreaking ceremony took place, the groundbreaking was on April 20th, 2005. But in January itself, after confirming the design of the temple, I spent about 15 days, very intense 15 days with the architect. And we just finalized the design. And then I went to Rajasthan, Makrana. Makrana is the place where you get the best marble in India. It's with Makrana marble that Taj Mahal was built. And I also got to know the king of Makrana, and Mr. Chandravir Singh, and he assured me his help. And so I just went to him. I was his guest, and I told him, this is the temple design and this is what I wanted. And he actually helped. Without his help, I don't think it would have been possible. Like, Krishna may not have directly helped, but indirectly I can see, I can say, that he sent the right kind of people to help me in this project. So one, as I mentioned, is Mr. C.V. Singh, and he actually helped us with the marble work. And long before the temple work started, we had the marble work going. And he had about, when he started the work, he had about 100 people working to keep up with the pace. And another person he sent was the contractor. Like, this contractor is a person from Ujjain itself. But he was not in Ujjain for 18 years. Like, his family, his father also was a contractor, builder. But he became so big that there was no big enough job for him in that area. So he was mostly in Bangalore, Goa, Gujarat, and so his name is Mr. Om Prakash Khatri. And when he got to know that we are going to build a temple and our tender went out, he applied, and our architect actually told me that he will be the best person to do this job, because he was so well established, and he had a very immaculate reputation also. So we selected him, and the advantage was that he was so big that for him this job was a very, very insignificant job, but he wanted to do it because such a thing was happening in Ujjain. A temple is coming up in Ujjain. That's why he wanted to be a part of it. And because he was so big, like a person who builds, say, 20-story buildings, for him to build a 3-story building is very, very easy. So he actually completed the whole structure in 6 months' time. And because our marble work was already in progress, so by the time we came up to the plinth, we started our marble work. So both the work was going on simultaneously. The structure was going up and the marble cladding also was going up in this way. So this is how, by Krishna's mercy, the temple came up. My target was 1 year, but it was completed in 9 months and 20 days. We started our work on 20th April 2005, and the inauguration of the temple was on 10th February 2006. And anyway, the temple came up, and our inauguration also was very wonderful. Like, most of my godbrothers, senior godbrothers, came. more than 2,000 devotees came from different parts of the world. And that was also a very, very suitable time, because it was just before the GBC meeting started. On our inauguration was on Nityananda Trayadasi, which was about a month before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, Gaur Purnima festival. So just before the GBC meeting started, so most of the GBC members came to the inauguration. And and actually the biggest sensation that was created in that inauguration was the presence of Rani Mukherjee. Actually, initially I didn't want her to come, because my feeling was, I mean, in an occasion like this, what is the point in getting a movie star? Although her brother and sister-in-law and her father and mother were going to come, but when Rani got to know about the inauguration, she just insisted that she wanted to come. And it was just about a week before the inauguration. And when I told the police who were actually organizing the security, because many ministers came, the chief minister also was supposed to come, but he was new in his post as a chief minister. So he was very much overworked and he couldn't take the time. But the ex-chief minister, the person who was the chief minister just before him, he came. And many other ministers also came. Not many, few other ministers came. And so that's why the government, the police was very concerned about the security. But when they got to know that Rani Mukherjee is coming, they made the whole change in their plan of security. Like, for example, the original plan was that on the marquee where the seats are, the dignitaries will walk through the audience and come up to the stage. But they changed it completely. They said that we can't have her go through the thing. So they had to make a passage by the side of the pandal and away from everyone's eye, like we had to make the arrangement and come onto the stage straight from the side, because it was all, the sides were all covered. And even then, the crowd was difficult to control. Like, so many people. And probably that's another thing about a small place. And that shows what's happening to India, actually. The movie stars are more popular than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right in front of our temple, a new structure was being built, and that had, the roof was actually sloping. Usually in India you get flat roof, but sometimes that structure was kind of in keeping with the Western design. So it had a sloping roof, and people are sitting right on top of the roof, risking, like if one person slipped, then all of them would have actually fell from the top of that building. And people were just sitting there, and the roads were filled. There was such a traffic jam. All the roads were so badly blocked that our prasadam for the dignitaries were actually cooked at our old place where our temple used to be, as I said, the community hall. And they couldn't bring the prasad in time because all the roads were blocked. The car couldn't move. And Anyway, it created a big sensation, and then the temple, after the temple was built, along with the temple, we started the work of the ashram and the guest house. But the priority was on the temple. So when we opened the temple, the ashram was not ready. And so that actually caused a little inconvenience, because the pujari had to come from our old setup, the community hall. There was no facility for the devotees to stay. And for about 2-3 months, they had to commute from there and come and do the deity worship in the morning and late at night. But now the ashram is complete, the guest house is complete. Some people say that that Ujjain guest house is the best guest house facility in ISKCON. They say that it's even better than Bombay guest house. Anyway, we are not in a competition as such, but, and the restaurant is, whoever tasted the food there. Today only when we are driving, Chaitanya was telling Chaitanya Chandra that it's a real 5-star restaurant and the prasadam is very nice. Things are going on quite nicely. We had some difficulty because one difficulty was that being a very small place, the people there are very simple. Like big cities, you have very big people, wealthy people. But that place, being a small place, the people are not that rich. Even the rich people are not so rich. They're aristocratic. Actually, Ujjain is one of the oldest cities in India. You see, Ujjain goes back to, even in the recent past, Ujjain was the capital of Vikramaditya. Vikramaditya was the king who was famous for his chivalrous activities. Part of India was being attacked by the Shakas, a kind of a foreign invaders. But Vikramaditya single-handedly drove the Shakas out of India. Therefore, another name of Vikramaditya was Shakari, the enemy of the Shakas, or the defeater of the Shakas. Vikramaditya had his Navaratna in his court, the 9 jewels. One of them was Kalidas. I'm sure you all know about Kalidas. And they were all 9 were extremely brilliant personalities. Kalidas was a poet. Then there was Baraha Mihir, the astrologer. Then Banabhatta, Shanku. 9 brilliant personalities. And Ujjain used to be Vikramaditya's capital. It goes even farther back in Satyuga. When in Satyuga the milk ocean was being churned to bring out the nectar, then the demigods and demons started to fight over nectar. And during that struggle, a few drops of nectar fell. 4 drops of nectar fell at 4 different places. And Ujjain is one of those. And in those 4 places, Kumbh Mela takes place. Kumbh Mela is the Mela of nectar. Like you take bath, and taking that bath is synonymous to drinking nectar. So that way you can see, like, Ujjain was, of course, the original name of Ujjain, according to the Vedic time, or during the Vedic time, was not actually Ujjain. It was Avanti. Vikramaditya's capital was Ujjaini. But I think it has something to do with victory, the city of victory. But Avanti, again, is the capital of Mitra Vrinda, was the daughter of the king of Avanti, whom Krishna got married. And so 5,000 years back also, this city was quite prominent. And so anyway, even we can see that in the recent past, that place had been very, very popular, very well known. And there are many families that had been residing there for hundreds of generations. Like there is one family that claim that they are the descendants of Sandipani Muni. And things like that. Like, I don't know whether they are descendants of Sandipani Muni, but at least one thing is clear, that their family had been living there since time immemorial. Shamik Rishi Prabhu comes from that area also. One of Shamik Rishi Prabhu's brothers live there, and your sister also lives there. And they are very supportive. They come to the temple. And Banku Bihari, where is Banku Bihari? He is from Ujjain. So it's a very well-known place. So our guest house, if you come to Ujjain, at least we can assure you of quite nice accommodation and prasad. And we make arrangements we invite devotees, and actually the devotees are very hospitable. Today, when I hear these things, it makes me feel very happy. Today, Namras was telling me about one incident in Ujjain. Where is Namras? Okay. When he went to Ujjain, he just fell asleep and near the Brahmachari ashram, in the ashram. And so he fell asleep, and then in his sleep he could see that someone was doing something to him. And actually what happened is that one devotee saw him just lying there without any pillow. So without waking him up, he just put a pillow under his head. And he was telling how nice he felt about this gesture. I felt very happy to hear that this is what we need in our movement. A real feelings of love and friendship. Like that compassion, the care. And that's what creates the bond. We cannot force relationship. Relationship develops with a spontaneous development of emotion and feelings. And that happens from the exchanges, loving exchange, care and concern for each other. So, and I feel happy that the devotees there are developing that mood. And anyway, so in this way things are happening and Krishna consciousness is spreading very nicely. Today I got a report that in Bhopal, we are preaching in Bhopal also to the students there, mainly the students from engineering college and business management college. And there are, we have our facilities, we have our hostels actually, where this program was started by Radhesham Prabhu in Pune. And they're just following the blueprint of that program in Indore and Bhopal. And the students, I mean, the report that I got today after I came here, I just downloaded my email. And the report is actually saying that they are telling me that in their hostel there are about 40 people staying now, 40 students. They get up before 4 o'clock and they have Mangalartik at 4:30. Then after that, they chant for 1.5 hours, just sitting down at one place. And 25 boys are chanting 16 rounds. And then they go to their college, do their studies, take care of their studies. And I'm very emphatic about that point that they should not neglect their studies. That when they're students, they must take care of their studies. A devotee must be sincere. That means whatever he does it in the best possible way. It is not that we become devotee and we neglect what we are actually supposed to do. Rather, we should continue with our devotion and do the other things even better than we were doing before. Anyway, so this is my report that I wanted to submit to you all. And I hope I'm not in Maya. So, thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. And please help this movement. This movement is very important. The most important thing happening in this world is Krishna consciousness movement. And Srila Prabhupada has given the perfect structure in the form of ISKCON. This spreading of Krishna consciousness movement all over the world is not going to happen just like that. It needs a very systematic program for that. And Srila Prabhupada set that program up in the form of creating that institution, ISKCON. Because without a structure, without systematic propagation of this movement cannot possibly spread throughout the world. So, and that structure that Srila Prabhupada gave is the perfect structure. And we simply have to fit into the structure. Once a very important person, probably many of you know him, his name is Sri Chad Hinduja. He is probably, at least at that time, he was the richest Indian. Now I think Lakshmi Mittal is the richest Indian. But those days, Sri Chad Hinduja, or the Hinduja family, was the richest Indian. And Sri Chad was very close to us, ISKCON. Like, he's a very pious person, very nice. and pious person. Whenever he is in London, every day he comes to the temple, Soho Street Temple. It's not far from his house. And every morning for deity greetings, he is there. And he loves ISKCON, he loves Prabhupada. And one day he was telling me what a genius Prabhupada was, even from the as an organizer. And he was telling that Prabhupada's genius is in the way he structured ISKCON and the way he set up ISKCON, or set up the management structure of ISKCON. And he was telling that the Prabhupada's genius is that concept of collective management. That not one person, no one person could have been able to become the head of ISKCON. No one person could actually fit into Prabhupada's shoes. So it had to be a collective. And Prabhupada actually gave that blueprint, that collective management. And he was telling that because he's very well acquainted with the progress of ISKCON or the history of ISKCON. He knows the difficulties that we had gone through. And he was telling that, look, all these difficulties that you have gone through, so many leaders have defected, but ISKCON hasn't been affected by that. Because of this concept of collective management. Individuals may come and go, but because it is a collective body, those who left, okay, somebody else came and replaced it. The structure hasn't been affected by that. And I thought it was a brilliant analysis actually, and a person like him only can see these things because they are experienced in managing. And so, Srila Prabhupada has given us the perfect institution, the perfect structure, and perfect setup to execute Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And we simply have to fit into that. And we should come with a humble state of mind. Not to become a big leader, but to become a humble servant. That should be the mood of everybody. And ultimately it is Krishna who will make us whatever he wants us to do. So let's leave it at Krishna's hands. If Krishna wants, he can give us the entire universe. But our mood should be in a humble state of mind, with a service attitude. We are servants. We are not masters. It's a society of servants. ISKCON is actually a society of servants. The bigger the servant you are, greater will be your position. Not according to the way the materially it happens. The bigger the exploiter you are, the bigger the position you get. No, here it is just the opposite. Bigger the servant you are, greater the service attitude you have, accordingly Krishna will place you. And that is how this movement is going to spread. Last few days we had been discussing on Sharanagati, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur so wonderfully pointed out how to surrender. Surrender is not just a theoretical concept. Surrender is a practical application. And that is, surrender has different considerations. We have to become humble to begin with, to surrender. If we are not humble, how will you surrender? If we are not humble, if we are arrogant, then there is no question of surrender. And in order to surrender, we have to recognize how great Krishna is, how loving Krishna is, how caring Krishna is. It's a two-way thing. On our part, we have to be humble. We have to be completely devoid of vanity and pride. And at the same time, we have to recognize how great Krishna is. In one hand, we recognize our insignificant position, and at the same time, we recognize Krishna's absolute position. And that absolute position, again, is filled with love and care. And this is how this happens, this process of surrender works. And that surrender is, surrender consists of offering our body, our mind, our possessions, everything. That is the meaning of surrender. I cannot say, oh, I am surrendered, but let me keep these things for myself. No, it doesn't work. Okay, we may not be able to surrender everything in one go, but at least the process should begin somewhere, and we must keep progressing. Today I may not be able to surrender everything, but at least let me try to surrender something. And surrendering, he is saying, mind, manasa, deha, body, geha, my home and heart, my family, my possessions, jo kichu more, whatever I have, I'm surrendering unto you, Krishna. And we are discussing this morning only, right? Surrendering the mind, what does it mean? Surrendering the mind means the mind is not mine anymore. It belongs to Krishna. So with this mind, we should not think about ourselves anymore. This mind should be completely committed, dedicated to Krishna. And Krishna himself is demanding that. Man mana bhava. Think of me all the time. And the process is there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the process, a very simple and sublime process. It's simple. It's not difficult. For yogis, it's difficult who are trying to control their minds through an artificial process of pranayam, pratyahar, etc. Pratyahar, withdrawal of the mind from the objects of the senses. But what is our process? The process that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave? Use everything in the service of Krishna. We are not saying we'll withdraw our mind from that. Our mind is there, but this is meant to be offered to Krishna. So I'm not stopping the functioning of the mind. I'm using the mind. Whichever way the mind is going, let it go. But revert it back to Krishna. Is it difficult? No. Here is something. Let's recognize that this belongs to Krishna, or how this can be engaged in Krishna's service, how I can use it in order to glorify Krishna. So that is the process. This process is not saying don't look at a beautiful thing. Rather, our way is, yes, appreciate the beauty and recognize that this is meant for Krishna. A beautiful flower. We are not prevented from appreciating its beauty. But instead of using it for our sense gratification, we have been asked to offer it to Krishna. Such a simple process. Nothing to restrain from. No artificial way of preventing the functioning of the mind or other activities. Use, do whatever you want to do, but do it for Krishna. It's such a simple process, such a wonderful process. And then, on top of everything, in our own simple way, maybe defective way, when we try to approach Krishna, Krishna actually comes forward and picks us up. It is not that we have to go to Krishna. We simply want to go to Krishna and Krishna comes and picks us up. So that is the process. So simple, so sublime, yet so rewarding. So now we have got this by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, and let's take full advantage of it. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari. Does anybody have any question? Yes, Steve. Does it still qualify him to?
No, my
well, if it is not in relation to Krishna, it'll simply be a pious activity. Material. You'll be able to derive some material benefit out of it. But it won't give you that spiritual benefit of developing your love for Krishna. Because first of all, you are not doing it for Krishna. Krishna is not in the picture. Right? You are just doing it as a gesture, a good gesture towards somebody. So yes, it's a good act. And as a result of that, you will get some benefit out of it. But it's not Krishna conscious. Or rather, since it is not Krishna conscious, the benefit will not be spiritual. Like, you know, so many people are doing so many things. You know, good actions. Feeding the poor and, you know, opening hospitals and so forth. But it is not really linking them to Krishna, or it is not really deriving and bringing in some spiritual benefit for them. It's all material. Right? As Prabhupada used to say, that okay, you can feed them, but after some time they'll become hungry again. Right? These are just mundane benevolent activities. But the ultimate benevolent activity is to give Krishna. Remind them of their relationship with Krishna. Now, and again, so I will just bring another analogy from Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada gave the example that if a very rich man's son becomes mad, his memory is lost, he doesn't know who he is, he runs out of the house and gets lost, what will be his condition like? You can well imagine how difficult his condition will be. He'll have to beg and undergo so much humiliation just to get a morsel of food. Right? He won't have any place to eat, place to sleep. And people are just mocking at him, laughing at him, beating him, humiliating him. Now you see him in that condition in a street. Will you just give him a few dollars and say, go and have some meal? Or will you tell him, what are you doing here? You are the son of such a rich man. Why are you in this condition? Isn't it natural? So Krishna consciousness is like that. We are reminding everybody that they are the children of the richest personality. They are the children of the most powerful individual who is the supreme proprietor and supreme controller. So that is what Krishna consciousness is. Therefore, compared to that, giving somebody just $5 is, you know, an insignificant act of benevolence. Hare Krishna. Yes. To tell you frankly, when I embarked on the project, I didn't have anything. I just got into it. And Krishna arranged. Of course, Krishna didn't drop it from the sky. But, you know, through different sources, it happened. It happened. And I must admit that there had been many, many well-wishers who actually helped me in this project, because what do I have? I'm just a sannyasi. I don't possess anything. I don't own anything. I don't have any. But people came, gave money, and people also, another thing is that they didn't push me. You know, my anxiety actually, once this contractor, Om Prakash Khatri, really, Banku Bihari, do you know Khatri? Do you know Khatri family? Anyway, they're quite a famous family. He got to know that I had some anxiety that if I couldn't pay him in time, the work may stop. I mean, it's a natural anxiety. If I don't pay, you know. So I had the anxiety whether the cash flow will be there. And he got to know about that, and he came to me and told me, Maharaj, even if you don't pay, the work will not stop. You can rest assured, the work will not stop. And, you know, like, I mean, when people come up with such assurance, then naturally you are compelled to think that Krishna in their heart is actually directing them. And of course, he's a very nice person. He has become a very good friend of ours. And another thing is, he actually told me, like, you know, after he completed our work, he got the job in Indore to build the government office, like the, what's it called, the main. And then he got another job. Like, you know, now he has so much work that he's stuck in Ujjain. I mean, like Indore is giving him hundreds of crores worth of business. And he gives credit to Krishna for that, you know. That because he did the temple and his, you know, he was a big contractor, but you know, like his thing has been, his business has expanded to an unlimited extent. Hare Krishna. Yes, Jadunath. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, okay. So I must admit then I did not understand Chris's point, I mean Steve's point fully. The way he presented it sounded like just some mundane, you know, benevolent activity. But if on his part he is giving it to Krishna, giving him Krishna, then that will have a spiritual benefit. The recipient may not know. You don't have to say, you give him some, hey, come, we'll come to my house and have dinner today. Right? Now, he is coming to just have dinner at your place, but what you are giving him is Krishna prasad. So that will naturally have spiritual benefit. Right? So, a devotee just creates this agyata sukriti, unknown piety. Not that, yeah, and he doesn't have to broadcast, or he doesn't have to go to the class and with a mridanga and karta start chanting and ask all his students to join. If he can do that, well and good. But if he can't, doesn't matter. But he can, you know, like subtly give it to them. And that is how they'll become qualified. Like for example, that as I was saying, like we are preaching to the university students. Like not going to the university. I mean, we are going to the universities and giving lectures and so forth. But what we are doing is creating their hostel arrangement, accommodation, where they can live. And many students come from other places and they look for accommodation. And this accommodation that we are providing is comparatively cheaper. But so many other conditions are there. You have to be a vegetarian. So, you know, like this is how you're screening the individuals. And then subtly you give them Krishna consciousness. And already, I mean, as I was telling, like the report that I got today, that some of the boys are just, after finishing their studies, they're ready to move into the temple. Of course, the question is whether we want them to move into the temple. Because sometimes really it's better that they work outside, gather some experience and preach from there. Answers your question, Jadunand? Yeah. Okay. The reason I would say is that Prabhupada left. If Prabhupada was here, within this 30 years, I don't know what would have happened. Right? Probably the whole world would have become Krishna conscious. But unfortunately, Prabhupada left 33 years ago. And Prabhupada himself said that when an acharya leaves the planet, there's bound to be crisis. So Prabhupada's departure has caused a crisis. And that's what we are facing today. But the good side of it is that in spite of Prabhupada's departure, 33 years after Srila Prabhupada's departure, ISKCON is still together. ISKCON didn't fall apart. Now, in retrospect, let's consider Swaminarayan, as you said, Swaminarayan is flourishing, they're building so many things. Well, I would say, let's wait and see what happens to Swaminarayan institution after Pramukh Swami leaves. You see, that's one way, that's one advantage of having one identified leader. Then everybody can, you know, become united and but the problem is, when there are so many individuals collectively working, you know, to establish the line of authority and, you know, the attitude of submission, becomes very, very difficult. And that's one of our problems. You know, like, and that's why Prabhupada emphatically told us that our unity is the most important consideration. Prabhupada even went to the extent of telling that your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate with each other. Because Prabhupada knew that how difficult it will be, and Prabhupada also knew how important it is that we become united. You see, ultimately you can see like why Swaminarayan is flourishing so much. Because they have an, you know, distinctly identified leader, Pramukh Swami. Whatever Pramukh Swami says, that happens. Everybody just accepts Pramukh Swami, and everybody looks up to Pramukh Swami also as a very, very magnificent spiritual leader. But, you know, the real test will come when Pramukh Swami leaves the planet. Now it would be interesting to see with time what happens. And another thing is, you see, the ISKCON's biggest credit is the spiritual wisdom that it has and it is distributing. They don't even know who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. You know, what kind of spiritual institution it is, with all due respect. But you come to ISKCON and ask even a child, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He has it clear in his mind. So those institutions, you know, I will say that they do not have the substance and the foundation. But ISKCON has. And that is the most glorious aspect of this movement. Venkat Bhatta Prabhu? Yeah. Hare Krishna. Yeah, very good point. Very good point. And my immediate response is, yes, it has to be done with intelligence, not blindly. Surrender to somebody who is worth surrendering to. And what makes that surrender worthwhile? Because of the benefit that will be derived out of that. Surrender ultimately takes place due to two considerations. One is some material benefit, right? Somebody pays you some money and you surrender, just like the way it is happening. People are employed. The employees are surrendering to the employer. Why? Because he's getting some financial benefit. He's getting some material security. But the other consideration of surrender is the surrender due to love. The child surrenders to the mother spontaneously. Why? Because of love. Like even not only in the human beings, we see that even in the animals. Right? Like the child and the animal, cub of a tigress or a lioness surrender to the mother. Although apparently the lioness is so fierce. But it is surrendered. Why? Because he knows that that's not, I mean, to her, he is an object of love. That his instinct guides him to that. So that surrender automatically takes place. Have you seen a tigress carrying the cub? Bites onto where? With the teeth that is so sharp. Death to anybody. Right? And bites onto the most vulnerable point of the body, the back of the neck. When a tiger kills its prey, that is where it pounces on. And with a jerk, it breaks that spine. Back of the neck. But to the cub also, he's holding on the same place with the same teeth. But the cub is completely surrendered. Why? Because it knows that his mother is actually taking him to safety. So the ultimate consideration of surrender is through love. Through money or other temptations and allurements, the surrender that is derived out of is only temporary. It's artificial, therefore it's temporary. But the real surrender will come from love. Like in one hand we can see, like why so many devotees surrendered to Prabhupada the way they did. Do you know why? Because of his love. And Prabhupada didn't have to go and tell them, I love you, I love you. Right? But just Prabhupada's action indicated that. They saw that here is a person who really loves me. Here is a person who really cares for me. You see, and that is not only intelligence, it's even beyond intelligence. It is instinct, it's intuition, which is something that tells, that springs from your heart. And it's even beyond intelligence. Right? It was not an intelligent assessment. If I surrender to Prabhupada, what will be my benefit? Like, this is the intelligent consideration. But something that, you know, stirs your heart and drives you to him with full conviction that here is a person who is going to take care of me in all respects. So that is the real surrender. And you know, spiritual life is founded on that surrender. It is not a surrender out of compulsion, surrender out of fear, surrender out of temptation. It is a surrender out of a spontaneous impulse from the love, from the heart, as a response to the love that the other person is offering. And that is not registered here with intelligence. That is registered here. All right, Venkat Prabhu. I know you are always dealing with people with that consideration, and especially in the Western world, it must be so difficult. You see, why they're afraid to submit? As you were saying, like, you know, it becomes a frightening proposal. Just the thought of it. Because then they don't know what love is. Because the relationship is practically missing due to the absence of love. That's why they're afraid to surrender. But the same Western individuals, young boys and girls, they didn't have any difficulty surrendering to Srila Prabhupada. So much so that once, even before I met Srila Prabhupada, I asked one devotee, an Indian devotee, an elderly gentleman. He was a retired businessman, disciple of Prabhupada. And I was asking him about Prabhupada and the devotees. And he mentioned one thing, which really impressed me. he told me that the devotees love Prabhupada so much, they have so much faith and conviction that if whatever Prabhupada tells them, they'll just, without any hesitation, they'll just go and do it. That is the amazing thing about this devotee. And then he told that if Prabhupada asked them to jump from the top of a skyscraper, they will do it. Of course, not that Prabhupada would ever ask anyone to do that, but the question is that if he did that, they would do that. They had so much faith in Srila Prabhupada. And that is the point. Like the same people, those who are completely completely in fear of the thought of submitting to somebody or offering a mind to somebody. The same people have surrendered themselves to Srila Prabhupada in this way. Why? Hare Krishna. So, yes, Shyamal. What job? Okay, murder. A murderer. He likes to murder. Okay. Okay. Okay, if you look at it, I mean, a person somewhat fits into that category is Arjun. As a Kshatriya, he loves to kill. He's a warrior. Warrior means what? He loves to go to war and fight and kill. And here he is facing a battle where he'll have to kill his most intimate relatives. Did he do that? So does it answer your question? Yeah, so that is the one aspect of the answer. The other thing is that yes, in Krishna consciousness, every action can be dovetailed to Krishna's service, excepting four. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. Right? Now, as you were saying, stealing is actually breaking the principle of truth. So that's why it's forbidden. Don't steal. Right? Because that is breaking the principle of truth. Truthfulness. So these are the ways that one can be engaged in Krishna's service. Besides these four principles that we follow. Yes. And another thing is that, you see, doing things for Krishna cannot be whimsically done. It has to be properly executed. And the proper execution is according to the authority. Arjun is killing. But under whose authority? Is he whimsically killing? Is he killing for his own benefit? No. That point has been cleared at the beginning. Arjun didn't want to fight. Arjun didn't want to have the kingdom. Right? So he was not fighting to have the kingdom. But he was fighting because Krishna told him. So that is what makes it a devotional service. To be executed under the direction of the authorities. And Krishna is the supreme authority. So it's already 8:10. I'm sorry it took so long. The arati was at? Oh, arati was finished. Okay. Okay, sure. So you want to make some announcements?